Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Right Dishonourable podcast. Jazza is already making faces at me.
No, you're doing a really good job. Well done. It makes us sound a lot more professional.
Yes, we need to be professional. I'm Jimmy. I'm here with...
My name's Jazza John, and we're using full names because we got told off in the past, Jimmy. Have you already forgotten?
I'm Jimmy Nichols. I'm here with Jazza John and...
John Savanti. Why are we using full names this week?
Because then people can Google and stalk us. Oh. It's really necessary for when one wants to build a fan base.
I mean, Jazz is cheating, really, because he knows why.
Why? What? Because I'm not using my like full name.
Full name.
Yeah, but when you talk about the BNP openly on the internet, you kind of need to cover your tracks.
Are they really a thing anymore?
No, they were a while ago, but it's a good excuse, and Jazz John sounds a lot better than my actual full name, so...
True.
Branding.
Hooray. And so this week we are going to be talking about three things as usual, current affairs, social issues and politics. Is that
correct? Those are the three things that we talk about.
And we're going to be doing three different segments, starting off with a discussion about Poppygate, as Jazza reliably informs me that it is called. What is Poppygate?
I mean,
Jazza?
Somebody will have at some point referred to it as Poppygate. So it's Remembrance. We're doing this on Remembrance Sunday, which is the day in the Western world when we commemorate those who have fought in wars are dead.
It's not everywhere in the Western world, is it?
No. So it's the 11th of November is Remembrance Day.
Hmm.
And I just know that in like Asia, the 11th of the 11th is Singles Day. So it's a celebration of being single. It's like an anti...
It's like inverse Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah, it's an inverse Valentine's Day. So it means absolutely nothing to them.
So what happened in Poppygate, if you haven't already explained it?
Somebody photoshopped a poppy onto an already existing picture of David Cameron. The internet found it hilarious. But also, wider discussion. Should we be wearing poppies? Should we not be wearing poppies? Should those who don't wear poppies be chastised?
I mean, none of us are, in fact, wearing poppies.
I've bought two, though. So I've given to
the boss. You're not wearing them, though, are you?
Well, no, like, when I'm at home,
I know nobody's seeing us, because it's...
What's
our
second topic?
Sorry. our second topic is, what's the... A famous Instagram star whose name I've forgotten.
Esna O'Neill.
Made a video about how she's quitting social media, although obviously since she posted the video to social media, there's limits to the degree in which this is literally true.
Mm-hmm.
But she posted a long video explaining why social media had come to dominate her life and ruin it, effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, she had a 17-minute breakdown. I'm not being unkind, but it's just like that is a fairly accurate description.
It was still able to edit it quite nicely, though. It had good narrative. As a YouTube video, it had art.
Super well edited.
It's okay for an Instagrammer.
There's like some sort of subtext of rivalry between YouTube and Instagram.
There's turf wars between Instagram, YouTube, and Vine. You don't know about this? Thirdly, we're going to be talking about Justin Trudeau, who is the new Liberal Prime Minister of Canada, who's very sexy. But he's also got a 50-50 cabinet. So he has... It's actually not quite 50-50. He has 16 men and 15 women heading up his cabinet positions.
Disgraceful. There's actually a video of him falling down some stairs. If you want to...
Why have you not told me about this before?
It's on the John Oliver segment that I told you to watch.
We're going to play the intro music.
And
I'm
going to
watch
the video.
The video of Justin Trudeau falling down some stairs. Excellent. Poppies have been chosen as the symbol in the United Kingdom as representative of those who have fallen in conflict. Do you know why they've been chosen, actually, by the way?
Because in Flanders Fields, which is in Belgium, there was a battle in World War One, and after the fighting finished, poppies grew in that field as sort of a symbol of life, basically.
Do you know why poppies grow really well in that field?
Because of all the human remains made it super fertile,
Because poppies grow very well in high iron soil, and all of the blood made the soil iron rich. And that is how we remember the dead. Other countries use different things. I feel like John's just kind of disgusted.
Yes, that is fucking gross.
I know, but it's quite a pretty flower, so it's fine, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now that you put it that way, it's why aren't we also wearing mushrooms? Because mushrooms grow around decaying things.
I think there's a marketing campaign.
Maybe you
there.
Should put that to the Royal Legion and see what they make of it.
We'll see. But basically, annually in the United Kingdom, in the run-up to Remembrance Day and Remembrance Sunday, which is the 11th of the 11th, you will see most, or well, quite a lot of people wearing poppies on their lapels, and specifically, there's recently been a lot of controversy about TV presenters who don't wear, who choose not to wear poppies when they're on TV. That's by the by. Somebody at number 10 decided that it would be a very good idea for them to Photoshop badly a poppy onto the lapel of David Cameron in a very well-known photo.
I mean, without you seeing this photo, you will not be able to imagine how badly the photoshopping is. It's atrocious.
Like, it's a copy-paste job. Like, I feel like they didn't even bother using Photoshop, to be completely honest. There's no shading, no grade. Like, it's terrible.
It's objectively terrible.
The internet kind of only minorly got a little bit annoyed. It's just like, oh my god, what are you doing? Why couldn't you have just worn a poppy like a normal person and just taken a photo that way?
He's a very, very busy man. He doesn't have time just to stand and be photographed.
Although he does love a holiday. But the internet kind of pushed back. They then changed it to an image of him actually wearing a poppy. Not before the internet noticed and then kind of went crazy with photoshopping his head onto poppies, turning David Cameron into a poppy, covering him completely in Photoshop poppies, and it was quite beautiful.
It's kind of ironic that they should make this cock-up, given the controversy about Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader. Will he wear a poppy or will he not wear a poppy? Or will he wear a white poppy instead, which is the pacifists' version of the red poppy? And you'd have thought that they think, maybe we should just get this one right, maybe just by finding, I don't know, a real photo of the Prime Minister.
Of which there are surely loads.
I mean, even if he's too busy, just go into the back. He's been like Tory leader for so long now. Just go a couple of years earlier. No one would have noticed that.
Yeah, but on a side note, does anybody know whether Corbyn actually wore a poppy?
There was a service today that I didn't watch.
Right, so we don't know, basically.
I assume he did, otherwise the Telegraph would have already gone into meltdown. So we'd have
websites, the internet would have broken.
I think you do kind of have to.
We're not wearing them now, though.
No, but I mean...
Okay, so this is interesting.
I'm saying this, because go on.
So there's a lot of people on my Facebook feed, which is the best place for me to find nudes, is just anecdotes of how my friends are behaving.
Yes.
But there's been a big to and fro between a few friends who are like, you definitely should wear a poppy, to those who are like, if you don't want to wear a poppy, just don't wear a poppy, it's fine. and so do you, like, as a general, really broad question, do you think that it is disrespectful to not wear a poppy, like, during Remembrance Sunday, or specifically if you're, like, public facing? So, for example, people who are politicians or TV presenters.
I think it definitely is, because the World Wars happened, well, okay, the first... No, actually, both of them happened less than 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, It's very easy for us to sort of forget about it and say, oh, it happened so long ago, who really cares now in 2015? But a lot of people did give their lives in the name of sort of freedom of this country. And I know that immediately, having said that, I sound like a UKIP supporter. But it's a fact. There was, you had Hitler, who was sort of responsible for the Holocaust, apart from anything else. Whatever.
Really? Was that him?
Yeah, I mean, whatever else you think of his policies, that one was a pretty controversial one. And your grandparents sort of, fought against that.
How long is it before Benjamin Netanyahu, threatens to declare war on us for what John has just said?
I don't think we're significant enough, I'll be completely honest.
He is that crazy, though.
What do you think, Jimmy? Do you feel that we should, it's something that we kind of have to do, otherwise you're being a bit of a dick?
I don't think people really care. I think this is kind of a non... There is a very small subset of the media... I just named the Telegraph, and they are one of the people, the Daily Mail, who really gives quite a lot of a shit about whether or not you wear a poppy. I think most people, if you went into an office and somebody wasn't wearing a poppy, probably wouldn't even register it. You'd just be like, okay, well, whatever. If, I mean, there are some people who are, you know, who give money to, like, to veterans charities or what have you, support Help for Heroes or those sort of things, who probably maybe just choose not to wear a poppy, just not out of a political statement, but they just don't wear one. And it just seems...
So I only buy, like, one or two poppies and then put them on my jacket. And then if I happen to be wearing that jacket, I will be wearing a poppy. Yeah. But I do try and give, like, a little bit. And the poppies look quite... They're very well designed, so I'm not adverse to them. But is there something to say about... is it quite nationalistic, the way that we do this in our country? Do you think that is a nationalistic overtone to the symbol of the poppy and glorifying of the war dead?
That's become the problem with it, is it's become synonymous with nationalism, and everybody's a bit embarrassed to be a nationalist because nobody wants to look like they're part of the BNP.
I mean, it's only like the Olympics that made it okay to fly a Union Jack.
Exactly. But when you think about it, why wouldn't you? It's one day in the year that you sort of are required to commemorate something. And it is something that, when you think about it, is very important in terms of our history. Well, in terms of world history.
I mean,
it is
important. So there are a lot of other important wars which we don't commemorate at all.
So it's actually for all war dead. So that's what it's meant to commemorate. It's for all war dead.
Yeah, he's right. It explicitly is.
Hear that? John says, I'm right.
Not really. Like, it's not meant to commemorate, like, those who died in the Napoleonic Wars, for instance. That's not, like, part of its stated remit. It's like all wars since World War One.
Yeah.
But that's when most.
But that's like the modern era, and most people will have a personal connection to a war post the First and Second World Wars.
That's
like,
also in
that's
terms
the reason
of
we
numbers,
do.
Where you know, huge swathes of people started dying in wars because we had the means to kill, like mass murder.
I mean, there's a lot of historians that would probably quibble for various reasons.
Yeah,
but
okay.
The only reason that it's from the First World War is because that happens to be the war after which the poppy thing was set up. That's really why we date it back.
Yeah, but also it's seen, at least in modern times, the most significant war in terms of pointless loss of life. And where we used to line up people so that they could get mowed down by machine guns and then just replace them with more people. Mm. It was probably the first time that war was seen as something tragic and horrific and something that you shouldn't do, rather than something noble that a young man should go through as a rite of passage, like you should join up to the army and come back a hero. People, the public perception of war shifted hugely after the First World War, and I think that that's something that we often forget in kind of like our national narrative. Like even stuff like the Boer War was seen as something glorious.
I don't think it is forgotten all that much. I think that's quite a widely known fact how terrible World War One was. But the fact that before that we were
if the country wasn't at war, it was seen as a negative thing rather than a positive thing.
That's definitely putting it too strongly.
I don't think so. I'm not disputing that war was more
acceptable beforehand, but war was hated for all sorts of reasons. Apart from anything else, after the Napoleonic War, they started bringing income taxes to pay for the wars.
Oh, the bastards!
Well, I'm saying if you think war is obviously a positive thing, people don't really like being taxed. Mm-hmm. So no, that's the story is a lot more complicated than what you've just said.
Well, yeah, but I'm painting with broad brush strokes.
I mean, I'm just... If people don't want to wear a poppy, I feel that part of the reason we fought these wars... Well, actually, the First World War was not really like this, but... Part of the reason we fought the Second World War is so that people couldn't force us into conformity. And this is one of these things, isn't it?
Groan.
Where is this coming from? Who are you?
I'm not, like, I sometimes wear a poppy, I sometimes don't. For me, it's not a big, like...
So, no, wait, but this Second World War, how... Was it a war against conformity?
I mean, you're aware with Nazism.
I'm just
imagining... You're aware what Nazism was and why it was bad.
So if there is a hell, imagining Hitler looking up right now going, ha ha, so fought some wars and now he doesn't want to wear some poppies. I have won! Ultimately, I have won!
I feel like Hitler, like, if he was talking from the grave, would have a slightly less camp German accent. Like, maybe.
Have you not seen
aggressive.
His speeches? He was super camp. He loved it. What do you think? Do you think that this is still something that's going to be relevant in the next, like, 50 years, do we believe? Or is this now such a strong part of our history as, like, a country and as, like, a... as a continent, because it was primarily a European war, right? Both the first and the second,
basically, until the British.
Well,
Legion...
we see it like that, but
I think it depends where the Europe debate goes. Actually, if we were to leave Europe, I think it would be more likely that the poppy thing and remembering World War One would be seen as more significant. But the World War One, World War Two is very much wrapped in kind of an anti-German feeling in Britain. Mm-hmm. And if we were to move closer to Europe within the next 50 years, which right now looks unlikely but could happen, I feel World War One and World War Two would decline in importance because the way we would conceive of ourselves in national terms wouldn't really connect with that.
Is that Britain versus German narrative still relevant?
No, I don't think that's true.
I only very rarely hear people say two world wars and world wars and one world cup now.
Oh no, the British are obsessed with Germany. Like, we're actually...
Are we?
We are. We're far more obsessed with World War II as a German versus British thing than any of the other European countries.
No, I'd say the big thing that people hammer home these days is, like, don't forget the Holocaust. Because no, seriously, I think that's what you're taught.
I think that's
important in schools. It's definitely what's important in Germany.
We're definitely not taught that the reason we fought the Germans was to fight conformity.
Yeah. We definitely.
No. But the reason why it was necessary to fight the Germans was because they wanted to impose a fascist state across the whole of Europe.
No, see, that's not
that entirely is about freedom and conformity.
But that narrative isn't what is emphasised in schools. What's emphasised in schools?
I'm not saying no. I didn't say that narrative was emphasised. In schools, I said the German versus Britain narrative is important to our culture, which is not disputable.
I think that
simply is a fact. Like, what's the most famous sketch out of Fawlty Towers? It's the don't mention the war sketch, and that kind of attitude has proliferated throughout the entirety of the post-war, you know, British culture.
Yeah, I know, but Fawlty Towers was 40 years ago.
No, I agree.
Name me something recent that still plays on that narrative.
The fact that Britain, like England, considers itself to have a great footballing rivalry with Germany.
Oh, yeah,
the Germans flatly do not give a shit.
Yeah, no, but that's not... That's like an ongoing thing that is actually just quite embarrassing about the fact that our football team isn't very good.
That's entirely based on the World War narrative.
Yeah, two World Wars, one World Cup. But I don't
exactly.
think that... I don't.
You
think...
just asked me to name you a recent example. I just named you a recent example.
But that's a very... That's a niche of people. Like, the rugby fans really give a shit about England versus Wales. I, as both a Welsh and English
football
person,
football
don't give
is more
a
important
fuck.
To appreciate to English culture than rugby is. So.
No, the point is, you're just wrong, basically.
No, I think you are just wrong, and I think you're in denial about the way World War II is perceived in Britain. I mean, you're right that it's becoming less and less that way, and I think the reason it is becoming less that way is because school kids do not... Like, being British is less important to our generation than it was the previous generation. Mm-hmm. Kids in this country think of themselves...
Yeah, because we haven't had that antagonist, that's why.
Yeah, and that's why I think World War One and World War
II will
potentially become less important because it's no longer about that narrative of Britain versus Germany.
But now it's Britain versus the EU, and the EU is a direct kind of progression from the peace treaties that were trying to be drawn up post-World War Two.
I'd actually just like to put into the mix here that if things with ISIS, ISIL, whatever it is, really kick off, there are going to be parallels historically drawn between any war we get into in terms of that and the war versus the Nazis, because we'll see them both as totalitarian fascist regimes.
Yeah.
So it will suddenly become a lot more relevant again.
Good. So it's Remembrance Sunday today. What did you boys do to commemorate the dead?
I was
probably asleep at 11 o'clock, to be honest. So
and
I,
so you I were silent. Good, excellent.
I then had a croissant to celebrate European values. And also croissants are tasty.
Great. If you guys have any other opinions on the poppy or our narrative with Germany, apparently is what this conversation turned into, then please do tweet us at Right Dishonour or go to our website and comment on this episode. Are we happy with how this went?
So I we So Jazza, this week something incredible happened on YouTube that shook the various communities of the social media world.
I feel like you're being facetious.
By and large, I am, but. So, like, a famous YouTuber slash Instagrammer.
She's more of an Instagrammer than
a YouTuber. Made a video about why she is leaving social media. Firstly, who is she? And secondly, why did she make this video?
So, actually, frankly, I'd never heard of her before. But if you
What is her name?
Her name's Esna O'Neill.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
I just had to double check. And she has like 500,000 followers on Instagram. That's not a small amount. And had about 250,000 subscribers on YouTube. Was very much of a specific kind of genre of social media person, in that it was lots of basically wellness posts and selfies and pictures of how amazing her life were and all of those kinds of things.
When you say wellness, you mean like self-help sort of?
Essentially, she was also vegan,
okay,
as well, and so pushed that.
So lifestyle things.
Which is what does very well on Instagram, which is my Instagram is mainly me pulling faces at selfie cameras, because I'm inverting that narrative. It's really good. Essentially, she started posting on social media when she was about 14. She's now 18/19, and has kind of built up a reasonable empire for herself. She's signed to a modeling agency. She's had lots of sponsorship deals with brands in terms of what she's posted online. And she says that all of this made her miserable. And she said that she saw famous people online, tried to mimic them, tried to become somebody who was like the people that she idolized 4-5 years ago. And she says that the pursuit of that fame and the pursuit of that success online has made her miserable, because it's superficial, it's skin deep. And so she's quitting social media, and to her credit, she's deleted her Instagram and she is no longer uploading to YouTube.
Do you see this as a comment on the nature of social media, or is it just more that chasing fame tends not to make people happy? Which of these is more important?
So the fallout of this, with lots of people who have made responses to this, seems to have been, well, you're using social media in order to be famous. Of course you're going to find it miserable.
Yeah.
Because lots of people put stuff on social media to be creative. They put stuff on social media in order to cultivate like a place where people can discuss things and talk about stuff. Or musicians use it in certain ways, and bloggers use it in certain ways, sketch comedians, etc. And she was basically a famous person online, and there doesn't seem to be a lot more to kind of like the stuff that she posted, that other than this is going to be a way for me to make videos and to make beautiful images of myself. And she also, when she before she took down her whole Instagram feed, she had gone through a lot of the photos and changed the descriptions to accurately describe what she felt that day. And so there's images of her kind of showing off her abs, and then in the description she changed it to, "This was the only thing that made me happy that day," was when people started liking this photo. There's also ones of her like in a bikini, where she essentially said that she didn't eat for the whole day and was sucking her belly in the photo so that she looked good.
John, you and like not involved in the YouTube community, so I'm sort of wondering what your response to all of this is, given that you're not like an Instagrammer or whatever.
I mean, I think it's very, as somebody who's like had their own mental health problems, I find it quite heartbreaking from that point of view.
Do you think, so the video that she made that was like 17 minutes long,
yeah.
Do you think that this is something that has kind of affected her mental health?
Well, she spoke about
obviously it.
She talks about depression and anxiety,
and I don't think that's actually a very hard thing to label yourself with. People, there's this crazy perception that somehow people think it's quite sort of easy to say, "Oh, I'm depressed," or "Oh, I feel anxious." It's actually quite devastating to admit to yourself, let alone anybody else, that that's a thing, really. So I think that's definitely the sign that, you know, that video is kind of part of a larger breakdown.
Really. Do you think it's the fault? The way I feel that some people spin this is that social media is bad for your mental health. Do you think that's true, or do you think it's the way she's used it?
I mean, you can argue whatever you like, but empirically it is. There's a lot of research that's proven that social media is bad for your mental health.
In what way?
That's a very broad... As somebody who is very on social media, like, that's a really broad kind of statement to make, right? About something that can be really good for people.
I'm not conflating it to the point of saying that it actively makes you... Okay, I should maybe refine what I'm saying there. I'm not saying, you know, if you go on social media, you're definitely going to feel anxious and depressed and whatever. I am definitely saying, though, that it's not... conducive to your mental health. Like, it has been proven to cause a lot of people a very significant amount of anxiety, and actually,
but that's because of the way that they use it, though, right?
Well, there have been a lot of studies done by psychologists into the idea that basically our brains are not developed enough to deal with the kind of complex social networks that now exist through things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. And because our brains are, see, essentially, from a biological and neurological point of view, our brains are exactly the same as a caveman's. Mm-hmm. If you put a caveman through our modern age, no, this is true. If you put
there is a significant thing that the way the brain kind of adapts to new skills and new technologies is that it actually physically rewires itself. Like, new connections are forged and old connections that are relevant are made stronger.
So, in that sense,
we don't have
but
the same
But what I'm saying is,
cavemen.
So this is the example I always use to explain this. The part of your brain that it deals with facial recognition is still built for the same capacity that a caveman's was. A caveman would have to deal with the facial recognition of what is today maybe a very, very small village. Mm. Nowadays, on your way to work, you pass a small country's worth of people if you live in a city. That's just like an analogy of how overworked your brain is. Complex social interactions that we have now are so nuanced. The reason that we suffer with mental illness is becoming such a big thing. The World Health Organization predicts that it's going to be the leading cause of disability by 2030. The reason that is such a big thing is because our brains aren't built from a hormonal point of view to be able to deal with the complex emotions of modern life. We basically, our emotional reactions to things are now too complex for our brains to cope with.
I feel like there's truth in what you're saying, but I get the impression that Esna's kind of, like, I want to shy away from calling it a breakdown, but her kind of decision to get off of social media is because she was using social media with a very specific goal to, I want to get loads of likes and I want to be famous.
Yeah.
And you play a game in order to do that, and you have to filter yourself quite literally on Instagram in order for you to be able to kind of gain the amount of popularity that she was seeking. And I think that that is what affected her so much, rather than the use of social media in its own right.
But the problem is, though, that the way social media is set up is you're basically, across the Western world, you're exposed to it too young in many ways. And it is when you think about...
Oh, yeah, if I had kids, I wouldn't let them anything until they were, like, 14,
so she's
15, 16.
So she's obviously, like, a prime example. I think she said in that video that she was first doing this when she was 12. That's a really hard thing for a 12-year-old to wrap their head around, that, mm-hmm. like, trying to get that level of popularity. The other thing is that things like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, when you think about it, are the world's biggest video games, because mm-hmm. everything you put out there is about getting the most likes possible and being as agreeable as possible.
Yeah, and it is gamified to a certain
extent. It is gamified,
and
when you
go through shaping your image as a teenager, I mean, being a teenager is hard enough because you try to shape your image to be really likable, but when you're trying to be likable not just to your school,
like,
or your family,
of thousands
but hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, that is too much for you to emotionally...
So this was an interesting...
It struck me that when she was saying all of this, she seemed to think it was really revelatory, but I thought a lot of what she was saying was quite obvious.
So I think it's revelatory to a lot of her audience, who are going to think that she's being incredibly candid in everything that she puts up, because right. there is that illusion, and we know to be more kind of aware of when somebody tags in a brand, it's probably going to be a sponsored.
It's not even just the branding thing, it's just there's, when you think about it, it's obvious that there's a distance between I know on, sure. on YouTube the conceit is, yes, I'm kind of your best friend, but behind a computer screen.
Sure, but she also was in the same position as a lot of her viewers, as somebody who wanted that lifestyle and saw this lifestyle and thought it was great, and has been on that journey. And I think that she's wanting to warn that that is something that is not necessarily the best thing on the face of the planet. I also wanted to talk, it's interesting in terms of mental health and anxiety as well, because a few years ago, Zoe Sugg, who is kind of like the flagship vlogger in the UK, when she first started doing like TV spots and stuff, she uploaded a video to her second channel where she did also have a breakdown. She was in tears, saying that I can't handle all of this pressure, all of this pressure to like be on TV and to be liked by everybody. And that's been quite convenient, like nobody really talks about that aspect of like Zoe anymore, but the problem is that we've had famous young people in the past, but I think that there's been networks that have supported them, whereas more often than not, the people that would normally be supporting these young people, their parents, their management, etc., etc., they don't understand the implications of having to be likable to that number of people. And
I don't know it's as new as you seem to imply it is there. I think in a lot of ways this is a rerun of like young rock bands in the 60s who often went off the rails and ended up dying because of drug overdoses and that sort of thing.
So the way that I see it is because it is kind of parallels of kids who grow up on like the Disney Channel in the US and people who are growing up on YouTube. People who grow up on the Disney Channel have like all the support that you could possibly need. It's made sure that they aren't going to go off the rails, although Miley Cyrus is probably an exception to that rule. But it's dangerous when these kids have so much power and in their formative years are kind of being sold as a commodity. That's only going to affect you in a certain way.
So what would you... I mean, whose responsibility is it to fix this problem if it is a problem that can be fixed?
Management.
So you think...
Because management are invariably... they have gotten a lot better, but management is often... very slapdash about what they get there or what they have gotten some of their talent to do and at certain ages. And so there are actually there's labour laws about how much people can do after under the age of 18, and I think that is flatly ignored with an awful lot of people online.
That's not just the management's problem though, that's the company's problem. Like, for example, that's
YouTube. Who are like sponsoring.
That's you know, if it's YouTube, that's YouTube's problem.
I don't think it is YouTube's problem, because they're just the platform, they're not facilitating brand deals.
So
it's management.
This is similar to the Uber argument, isn't it? Like, we're not really responsible for our drivers.
No,
because
I mean,
just a platform by which drivers are connected to customers.
But if YouTube, for example, are giving money to a 16-year-old because they've got 100,000 subscribers, I think that basically what I'm saying is there should be an age at which you're allowed to monetize these things, and before that you can't.
You can only monetize. It's monetized through advertising, specifically through YouTube. People don't get very much out of that. Most of their money will come from brand deals, but you won't actually be able to get payouts until. I think it's 18.
Oh, okay.
But then if the money from that stream isn't that large anyway, it doesn't really make all that much difference that you can't...
It depends. Getting millions of... If you're like a Tom Scar or a Zoe, you are getting a ton of money out of your AdSense, your Google AdSense. But most people don't. We've overrun on this topic.
Should we just stop awkwardly?
Yeah.
So,
Jazza.
So Jazza.
Fuck's sake!
It's because you just started rolling, and then I don't know what to say.
We're talking about Justin Trudeau and Canada. Go.
This week, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has just been won in a general election in the country
of Canada.
In the country of Canada.
The great nation.
The great nation of Canada has announced that his cabinet will be composed of 50% men, 50% women, or actually very slightly more men.
16 men, 15 women, but pretty much a 50-50 cabinet.
And this makes him... Is this the first cabinet in the world to have an equal balance?
Oh, I don't know. Yes. No, it's not, because there are a couple of other countries...
Some countries have quotas, don't they? But Canada doesn't have quotas in this regard.
So this is very right dishonourable of us, but there's a country in Africa, I think, that has more women in parliament than men.
Yeah, but women in parliament's not the same as...
as cabinet positions, correct. But one would... anyway, continue. But this is kind Canada.
Of, this has kind of burnished his credentials as like a reformer and someone who's going to take Canada away from the conservative, some might even say slightly reactionary politics of Stephen Harper, mm-hmm. who is the Tory Prime Minister who's just been booted out of office. How do you interpret this, Jazza?
Well, first of all, Justin Trudeau is very sexy. And we've seen him... we've now watched him fall downstairs... it's apparently his party trick.
That's what John Oliver said, but he might have been joking. And it's hard to tell.
Well, sometimes. In the video, he is very clearly going, oh, I put you there, and then I talk to them, and then I just fall down the stairs.
It's clearly... you know, like, it's quite a convincing falling down the stairs thing, though. It looks painful.
I actually knew somebody who that used to be their party trick. They'd get drunk and throw themselves downstairs. And they'd be like, look, I didn't break anything. Safe.
But Justin Trudeau has a really interesting background because he was a drama teacher by vocation.
Yeah, so one of the things that the Tories in Canada campaigned against him on was that he's, quote, just not ready because he didn't have any serious political experience, even though he is the son of Pierre Trudeau. Who
That's not like you to say that that is enough of a qualification to be Prime Minister.
What?
To say that because your dad was PM.
I'm saying that he does actually have quite a storied background in politics, even if he hasn't himself served in a significant office. It's not like he's just some random drama teacher who's rocked up to the show. But what does this like gender thing matter in your opinion?
I think it's hugely important. Well, because it sets a precedent in specifically like the like Anglo sphere, I think, that this is something that can be done and should be done, and basically we get to see how effective this 50-50 cabinet is going to be, and if actually Trudeau ends up leading this cabinet to have a to create a new wave of like Canadian influence internationally, then there will be less of an argument for people to say, oh yeah, like we will have women like 50-50 cabinets like in the future, but right now there just aren't enough like high power people. It shows that you can do that.
I don't think anyone was disputing that if you choose to, you can appoint the same amount of men as women.
Yeah, but then why don't people? Because we're representative democracies and that doesn't happen.
Well, because partly because people are not represented by people of the same demographic as them. They're represented by people who have similar ideas.
That's something that was also very interesting in the cabinet selection, in that it was so diverse, not just on gender, it was diverse on sexuality, it was diverse on ableist, on how physically able they are, on background. So there's a lady who came to Canada as a refugee. By religion, there's like Christian and non-Christian people throughout the cabinet. And I just think it's really cool. And should be setting a precedent. It probably won't, because
I don't really care. I mean, if people want to do that, that's fine. But
yeah, but that's because you're a white straight man who is very heavily represented in democracy. I mean, when you're like a refugee who wants to become
part of my point is that yes, like in the UK Parliament, I assume it's probably quite similar to the Canadian Parliament. There's a disproportionate amount of white, straight, privately educated men, mm-hmm. Often from Eton or Harrow or, you know, wherever. But those people often have entirely contradictory views. So to say that, like, I'm represented by both of those people just because I fall into the same demographic bracket is absurd. It doesn't really work as a logical proposition.
But of course it doesn't mean that the causes that are significant for not just minorities, but women who are actually the majority. It does mean that there is less of an understanding of particular issues. So, for example, the tampon tax is a really contentious thing at the moment. And the reason that the tampon tax wasn't seen as something is because there weren't enough women there who were saying, like, hold on, this isn't a luxury.
This isn't actually entirely... A lot of people have been talking about this, and it kind of pisses me off every time people do. Because if you look into this, of course, having taxes on tampons or any sanitary products is fucking ridiculous. It's not actually up to us, it's up to the European Parliament. we can't get out of it.
No, so, you know, so the reason that we can't change and that we can't remove tax completely from tampons is because of when we entered the single market, we didn't have zero tax on that product. Mm. But that is because we didn't have a very representative government that was saying that, of course, tampons and sanitary products aren't a luxury, because it's just part of the necessity of being a woman, right? Mm. And there was also something interesting when I was lucky enough to do a help out with a roundtable with Angela Eagle and a couple of other Labour ministers. They brought up we were talking about 50-50 quotas and all women shortlists and that kind of thing. Mm. And she was like, during the 90s in the John Major government, when there was more of a serious discussion about the privatisation of the NHS, the Conservatives drew up a list of things, a list of services that should be completely universal, and things like abortion rights were not on there, things like cervix exams were not on there, just loads of things that wasn't thought of by the majority male representatives who were coming up with these ideas of what is necessary.
You act as though the politicians actually are the only ones drawing up these kind of proposals, but...
No, but it's a wider issue, right? But if you have more women helping to make those decisions, then that kind of stuff is going to be less overlooked. And the same with people from other demographics. If it's whether it's religion or whether it's from the kind of economic background that you come from, it's really important to have that kind of plurality of opinions, right? You're laughing at me. Why?
Okay, so this is why I think it's all fucking bollocks. So if we have quotas, for example, if you had a quota in this country of there had to be a proportional number of ethnic minority MPs to the sort of proportion of the population, mm-hmm. ethnic minority MPs would actually be quite low. Because I think the total percentage of non-white people in the UK is something like 10.
It's about 88% of the UK is white.
Okay, so you'd only have 12% of MPs would be non-white. I think to put a cap on it like that would be bollocks.
No, but I'm not talking about quotas. Okay. I'm talking about having a pluralistic cabinet and government as much as possible.
So this is okay. So
pluralism could mean that you, in a cabinet of 30, you only have two women, and then you do have women's views. In the way that you described it at the table.
No, but that is ridiculous when women make the majority of the population.
You just said it's not about quotas. You just said it's not about proportionality. And then you've just gone and contradicted yourself right there.
No, I don't think I have. Like, it's about the way that you do it. Right.
The only way of guaranteeing demographics is to actually have quotas.
But it's because there's historically been a low amount of representation for women in the highest levels of government. That's why it's something that should be redressed, because because you see fewer women in parliament, and you see our parliament specifically being like people basically every Wednesday afternoon at Prime Minister's Question wagging their dicks around and going what kind of woman who is intelligent and cares about the issues is going to take part in that bullshit?
You've just maligned like every man in the country.
Yeah.
Implicitly.
No, fine. Yeah.
That's okay, Jez. Sexism against men is fine. John, you're about to say something.
So my other sort of point of view on all of this is I actually think when you talk about proportionality of representation, that's something that should be taken out of this political sphere. What I mean by this is I'm actually personally all for it's company incentives, things like that, to diversify boardrooms. I actually think in the private sector that's really important, because this whole idea that meritocracy works in the private sector is bollocks, because the private sector is very much aimed towards keeping white men powerful. However, and I know there is...
Not deliberately, but it is kind of a byproduct.
Well, I mean, some people would argue it is deliberate, but...
I think you should go over to Canary Wharf and then sort of reconsider if that is still true.
Canary,
the banking sector is one of the most cutthroat capitalistic sections of our economy.
Is capitalistic a word?
Yes.
Okay.
And it is also one of the most diverse in terms of different nationalities. If you go to Canary Wharf, you go into
Hang on. I didn't get to finish my point. wind it back in, sunshine.
You're not on question time, mate. No, I'm not obliged to give you time.
So In terms of public officials, I really do think you should be able to vote for who you consider to be the best candidate. And I don't think there should be any onus upon you to think, well, am I voting in enough women? On any level, I don't think it should
be... No, but I actively think
that. Well, see, I personally, I really disagree with that, because I think... So I look at things very much as MPs are there to serve the people who are their constituents. And I think it's very important on a constituent level, sorry, constituency level, apart from a national level, that whoever you're voting for is representing your interests. And I don't think you should necessarily worry about, well, I mean, this woman doesn't really represent my interest that much, but she is a woman, so I should probably give
her
a vote. No,
but there's a balance of that. Like, so, for example, when I ranked the people that I wanted to be selected for the Greater London Assembly, right? That's what GLA stands for.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. For the Liberal Democrats, I deliberately put ethnic minorities and women at the top of my list because I know that the Lib Dems are represented exclusively by white, straight, married men in Parliament. And I was just like, that's embarrassing. I want there to be a diverse face to the party that I decided to join.
You can look at that from the view of cynical electoral positioning, in the sense that you think you might get more votes by having a more diverse
candidate list. But I mean, actually, are you not embarrassed by the lack of diversity that's in the Lib Dems at the moment?
No, I frankly do not care.
I mean, in a way, what?
Yeah, but that's... But of course you don't care, because it's not something that affects you.
No.
Because you can see people who look like you, who sound like you, who have your background.
Way of reasoning.
No, it's rubbish.
No, you said I only think that because I'm a white straight man. I just happen to think that from a logical point of view.
So I actually, taking a slightly different view, I kind of think you're wrong to do that, because I think if you give somebody your vote, I think you should be voting for their policies.
Yeah.
I think that is the most important
thing. No, but so, for example, when I'm selecting people for the GLA, they're all going to have, for the Lib Dems, they're all going to have pretty similar views, right? So when it comes to pre-selection process, I think there should be more of a balanced choice across the kind of candidates that we get. When it comes to kind of like the one-on-one races that we tend to have across the country for constituencies, I think that that's when you have to look at which candidate represents your views better, and then generally go by party.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I'm arguing, is on a national...
Like, I'm not going to vote for Theresa May come winter, come fall, come whatever. What is that phrase that I'm trying to say?
come rain or
come
shine.
Come rain or shine, I'm not going to vote for Theresa May.
That's all I'm sort of arguing, is that at the end of the day, when it comes to a constituency level and a national level, you should look at policies, not people. And I think people... The problem is with politics now, and we've borrowed it too heavily from the Americans, is we care now more about personalities than we care about what people stand for.
I disagree. I think most people care more about parties than they do about the individuals they are electing to office.
Either way, I don't think... I've never actually met somebody who's bothered at a general election to read every manifesto. And I
nice to meet you.
Okay, all right.
But I made five videos about them.
it's not actually worth your while.
I think
they won't follow the manifesto anyway.
But
I
completely disagree. I think it's fucking embarrassing if you pass the vote and you
haven't
voted. The
way I vote, and I think this makes the most sense in terms of timing, in terms of what... In fact, that's not even relevant to what we were discussing originally.
So Trudeau in Canada.
No. I do think that's relevant to Trudeau in Canada. Okay,
Let me say how I vote, which on. I think makes the most sense. The way to vote is that parties will not follow their manifestos anyway. What you should do is have a look at them and try and work out what their instincts are. Because when they get to an office, inevitably, they won't be able to implement their plans properly because it's not possible, it's not practical, they don't have the political capital to do it. And also, there might be a crisis situation that has not been anticipated by anyone. In that, you want to rely on their instincts. You don't want to rely on what they said in a manifesto.
No, I disagree. The whole point of a manifesto is that you can hold a party accountable for not following through.
I mean, they don't follow through anyway.
They don't, but that's why they don't get voted in again. People got fucked off with Labour because they kept promising things that they couldn't deliver on, and Gordon Brown was a bit of a twat.
And it's the reason that the Lib Dems got wiped out, because people voted for a manifesto.
Exactly, the Lib Dems is a perfect example of people who got decimated following
through. The reason people flipped from the Lib Dems, we are now so far off topic. The actual reasoning is that some people voted for them as a none of the above party, and as soon as they went into office, that entire vote went away.
That's not true. They had a massive student vote that disappeared.
This is not based just on conjecture, this is based on actual research from Michael Ashcroft, the pollster. Another section left because Lib Dems climbed into bed with the Tories, and certain people voted for the Lib Dems purely to keep the Tories out. You know,
most people think, I think, left the Lib Dems because of the poor management of the climb down from student fees.
Yeah,
that was them.
I think it was fundamentally about the way they campaigned to get into office.
Having been at university throughout the
Are a very small proportion of especially considering they don't really vote.
Yeah, but everybody knows somebody who is a student. Their parents voted for the Lib Dems because they didn't think that their children should be landed with that kind of debt.
It's not really debt.
Yeah, no, we know that, but that's what people perceive it as. We need to wrap this up now. So Justin Trudeau's done a really good thing, but Jimmy and John think that it's crap.
Can I actually respond to like your substantive point, and you can edit out the bits that have no relevance? But
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. But I think you're right that it is true that if you have more women in a given parliament, they're more likely to raise issues that are relevant to women. However, they're not necessarily going to push through changes that are beneficial to women, which is why I don't think you should...
You can say that about literally any candidate, regardless of...
Exactly. That's why I don't think you should vote someone purely based on whether they're a woman.
No, but it should be something that you consider in terms of who you want to represent you and how diverse you want the people who sit at the top of our government to look.
Well, I don't care for reasons previously explained.
Yeah, well, okay. So if you'd like to disagree with Jimmy and John, feel free. I will be chastising them. You've had your time. I will be laying into them on Twitter and trolling the hell out of them. You can too, at Right Dishonour.
I'm quitting social media. I just can't take it anymore.
Right, okay. Please do go to the website rightdishonourable.com where the gentlemen here write things. I don't really write things very much. But yeah, see you next week, I suppose. Bye.